Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest, Benny Smith. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. And welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Benny Smith. Commissioner Benny Smith was appointed to the Shelby County, Tennessee Election Commission in April 2019. Now with the state, he works in analytics and innovation. Smith's research is credited for uncovering an extraordinarily high risk tampering mechanism and provides a new method for analyzing questionable election results. That research was part of a proof of concept he developed with black box voting to examine election system vulnerabilities. Smith has developed expansive business and technical skills throughout his career in government as a liaison between elected officials and IT. Smith was a software developer maintaining City of Memphis applications for divisions, including the Traffic Violations Bureau, Memphis Police, and Internal Affairs. In the private sector, he developed applications for lending, auditing at First Tennessee Bank, production metrics at International Paper, revenue management at Hilton Worldwide, and later held positions at Thomas and Betts. What's a secretary election commissioner do? Set policies and procedures necessary to aid the personnel of the election commission office in the performance of their duties with regard to the promotion of voter registration and the electoral process. Represent the citizens of Shelby County and their interest through open government and transparency. He's a co-founder, head of data analytics, finance, managed royalty accounting and payments to artists and creators, educate and teach the business of music and monetization through data and analytics and insight. Hello, Benny. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Did I hit that pretty well? It's kind of complicated stuff here into.
Yeah, but I'm like, where did that bio come from? That's a long one. It's a few of them.
But honest, right?
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, that's you. All right.
A little movement between that now, but I've accomplished all those things. That is me.
Okay. Well, you are known for your predictive analytics and proprietary method to forecast election turnout, and you advise candidates in nearly every elected office in Shelby County. Your research has been presented to elected officials, and at security panels around the country. So I brought you on to talk about Tennessee election integrity. But first, I think a little history is important to understand the context. Okay. So the history of Shelby County Election Commission is actually quite interesting. On June 4th, 1907, the State Board of Elections appointed three men to the first county election commission in Shelby County. A.B. Carter, Democrat, the chairman, was joined by James Britt Dern, Democrat, and T.G. Vinton, Republican. Commissioners were and still are appointed for a two-year term, right? Mm-hmm. In 1968, so fast forward 61 years, the legislature passed an act that increased the number of commissioners from 3 to 5. And in 1969, the first 5-member commission was appointed, and so it remains 5 today. In 1971, Betty Smith, a Republican, became the first woman appointed to the Shelby County Election Commission. And in 73, Leah Abbott, a Republican, was appointed, marking the first time in the commission's history that two women have been appointed. The first black commissioner, Catherine Bauer, a Democrat, was appointed in 75. This was the same year in which the commission was first chaired by a woman, Ann Weldon, who was a Republican. In 77, due to a change in the Tennessee law, the party of majority of the Shelby County Election Commission was determined by the majority party of the Tennessee General Assembly, not the governor. This is still how the party makes up the commission and how it's determined. In 1979, O.C. Pleasant, a Democrat, joined the Shelby County Election Commission. He remained on the commission until 2005, making him the longest serving commissioner in the commission's history. The very next year, 2006, without O.C. Pleasant, officials switched to electronic voting machines. The 2020 census shows Shelby with just under 1 million residents, with 51% being black. So fast forward to 2022. And 6 days after Memphis voters went to the polls last October to elect a mayor and other city officials, the proceedings were full of the technical mishaps that have plagued Shelby County, where Memphis is the seat. servers froze and the results were hours late, but expert at the county election commission assured both candidates and voters that the problems were minor and the final tabulation wasn't affected. So, Benny, were their problems minor and was the final count affected?
Yeah, I'm gonna go in the middle of it. You're in 2019, so there were totals that were affected. I think the part you're quoting now is from Bloomberg Business Week, because there was a series of events that happened. I was a citizen, and the story gets told a lot, but it never gets old, I guess. I still carry a BlackBerry. I took out my BlackBerry and I took a picture of the poll tape because I read the Tennessee statute that says that the poll tape was basically prima facie evidence. So the poll tape, for people who don't know what a poll tape is, it is literally a cash register receipt of what the vote totals are at the precinct. So crazy me, I took a picture of it and I wanted to compare that to the tabulated results because we have a statute that says that the election commissions are supposed to do that before they certify the results. Well, when I snapped the picture, it was 548 participants. When the results were tabulated, there were 330. So that's a 40% drop in the totals. And I sent that to some election commissioners, and the rest was written about, the majority of it was written about in the Bloomberg article. But we did have some problems. It went to a judge, and the judge basically said, somebody's got some explaining to do. In a game of addition, you should never be subtracting. Right. And I think the results of that case was sealed, but it did spawn what is now a huge movement around questioning the election results.
Your day job is actually a financial software developer and church organist. Did you ever think you'd find yourself involved?
I still do that. Yeah.
Did you ever think you'd find yourself involved in voter integrity issues?
I did not. You know, it's written about it on blackboxvoting.org. The proof of concept that you referenced in the bio is fraction magic. For all that don't know what fraction magic is, it is a rabbit hole. So be forewarned. I have a primer of how I got involved in elections. It's actually on my site. It's bennysmith.com. My name is bennysmith.com. So in the elections election integrity section, it says my journey through the rabbit hole. And it's a video by the GOAT, in my opinion, Bev Harris, the founder of blackboxvoting.org. And she is talking about how I was approached, because I was, before election integrity, I was known for forecasting turnout. So I was considered the numbers guy here. I'm the person that you come to when you want to get elected, because I'm going to write algorithms to figure out who will walk into the booth and vote. So someone like me is incredibly valuable when you're running for office. But what would happen is candidates would, when they would lose, well, everybody who loses, in my opinion, says that the election was stolen or something's wrong.
Right.
So I didn't really pay much attention to it. I just, you know, I'm just chalked up. You lost. Like, you, I'm the numbers guy. I'm telling you, you have to knock on so many doors. If you're at Kroger passing out flyers and not knocking on doors using the grassroots method, you are likely not going to win. But in 2014, so many candidates lost, and it did not comport with what was happening on the ground. And about six of those candidates came to me, and they was like, look, guy, you the software guy. Like, you need to look at these machines. We're telling you something wrong with the machines. And I kind of took it as a consolation prize. You know, I was like, I don't really think there's anything there, but I'm a software guy. I'll look at it. And I found some really nasty stuff when I took a look at it. And then that was, you know, my journey to the rabbit hole, where I developed this proof of concept and I was chasing algorithms is basically what I was doing.
So this is a little different, because we've had Patrick Colbeck on here, who wrote the book, The 2020 Coup, and basically broke the news that the machines had a wireless chipset in them, and that the companies didn't want to open them up to prove that, but they are there. And you can also have a cell phone next door to it, and you can open it up and you can see a Wi-Fi network, and it might say election one, election two, whatever the case may be. So proving that it's wireless, even though it's not plugged in to the internet, so to speak. So I'm curious, you know, this Foundation for the Audit USA Ballot Image Project.
Yeah.
The work was covered in a Bloomberg cybersecurity segment. You were profiled, as you said, by Bloomberg Business Week for discovering election irregularities at a Memphis precinct. You know, it cost Fox News almost $1 billion and maybe Tucker Carlson his job settling with Dominion. Has any company challenged you for coming forward with your findings?
No. Yeah, no. Matter of fact, I think I'm respected among, I think ESNS follows me on Twitter. And and I spoke to the senior vice president of government relations, and I didn't decline the trip. I just didn't feel comfortable taking it at the time that we were doing our elections, because I was fighting against the machines. But as a state election commissioner, I think I'm more open to taking that trip to go in and take a look at. He's the senior vice president of government relations for ESNS. So I think they know I'm a straight shooter. I'm really not trying to. I always say it like this. I don't have locks on my house because I don't trust my neighbors. I have them on there, so I don't have to. So a lot of what I advocate for is just making sure that in the event that something nefarious could happen, we have taken all the measures necessary to make sure that we mitigate those. And so and because I went out with Bloomberg Business Week first, I got approached by some other organizations, but I was comfortable with Bloomberg because they seem like a middle of the road, because I'm a Democrat. And if you notice, if anyone is following the work that I do, my fan base is Republicans. And that's, that pendulum swings depending on who the loser of an election is. I'm always talking about the integrity so that the loser feels comfortable with the results. That way they can do a postmortem, reassess, and we get a better product when they run for office again. So it's a weird mix. It's a weird mix of how things work for me. So I don't think that I get.
It should be bipartisan. I mean, if you're going to be fair in elections, it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican. You want a fair shot, right? I mean, you don't want to be stealing things.
Yeah, I took a beating in 2020. You know, I came out saying that for all the people who supported Trump, they should look for ballot images. They should do open records requests. They should get cast vote records. Everything that I would tell Democrats when they were losing, and they was like, dude, you trying to help a tyrant and you trying to save the Republican Party. I was like, look, y'all can get away from me. I'm not trying to save the Republicans. I'm trying to save the Republic. We have an issue where half of the country, like this is a coin toss statistic. Half of the country each year doesn't believe the returns. Somebody should be obligated to speak out. And what has happened is there's that void was once always filled by blackboxvoting.org. That was the most respected organization, Bev Harris. And she just got tired of beating the drum. Now she has given the organization to me, and I have yet to do something with it. And it's probably, I'm probably being drafted to have to do something with it to try to fill this void. But to your point about Dominion, that's kind of what happened. A lot of people took some of that research, didn't really look at it thorough enough, and then they went with the feeling and the passion of feeling like something is wrong because something is wrong. But we don't know what the original outcome or what if these outcomes can be trusted, because we don't have any evidence of it, right? I don't seek confidence. I seek evidence. You give me some evidence that something happened. All right, code. There ain't no such thing as no confidence. So I want some evidence. So in the absence of that, you have people, you know, in the absence of clarity, people make stuff up. So you have a lot of real good information that is then sidelined by passion. And passion is not a substitute for skill. So you have a lot of people who are passionate about the outcome. And that, you know, it's anecdotal enough to say there is at least somewhere that Trump probably did win, that it doesn't look like he won, but it probably happened. Because there's so much of a swell of people who are distrustful of the outcome. So what do you do with that? You try to do something that gives them the assurances or the evidence, in my view, that the outcome was something that they can believe in. And I don't think we believe in just trust the process. We just trust the evidence.
If you go to Vegas, you know, 10 times in a row and you get cheated at cards every time, you're probably not going back for that ninth or 10th time. So we need to trust in democracy. Now, I read an article on you saying most of your clients are Black. The precinct number 7701 is a Democratic stronghold and has one of the largest concentrations of African-American voters in a city known for racially fractured politics, let's just say.
Yeah, it was bad down here.
Yeah. So do you think your friends and neighbors were particularly targeted for voter fraud because of the demographics?
Well, if you just think about a contest, right? Is there any contest where there hadn't been any cheating? Like the Tour de France was like, it's every time, every time, every time. And then we find out that, well, he was taking performance. And so I'm skeptical of any contest, just by nature of knowing that, you have to ask yourself the question. And this was what I asked myself when I built Fraction Magic. Does anyone have an incentive to remain in power? Come on, that's such a simple answer. It's an automatic yes, right?
Yes, right.
Yes, you have an incentive to remain in power. So what would you do in order to keep that power? And I'm like, lie, cheat, kill ain't off the table. People have died. Like there are a lot of things that people do to remain in power. So why would I not suspect something like that to happen? So to your point, being in a predominantly black area, if the candidate of choice is not a black person or is not favored among black people, how are you going to reduce those numbers in order to get a win? You're going to do something to either dilute, divert, or affect that populace of voters. So all bets are off. Any gamesmanship that's necessary to make that happen. So Shelby County, we get a lot of precincts closed. The lines are long, the machine went out, the power went out. You see a lot of those things that happen when that would be the necessary things that would have to occur in order to depress a turnout.
And so probably a
So,
lot of skepticism and disenfranchisement, people saying, why vote? It's not going to work the way I want it anyway. Or even if I did want it that way, they'll do it for me anyway. Like the whole integrity, that's the word we're using these days, is gone from the voter. So they, why not just hand your ballot off to a harvester and let them do what they will because they're going to do it anyway.
And that's a problem. Like, what do you do? Like, where are the adults to say, yes, there is a problem. Let's not dismiss half of the country for being distrustful of the outcome. What can we do to give them a better product so that we don't have, man, we're destabilized in the region right now. Like, you take 2024 and, say Trump wins, say he runs and wins. Half of the country is going to say, well, he cheated. Like, but that half of the country said he did in 2016. And I guess Russia took the night off in 2020, right? I don't know. I can't make sense of it, right? Like, it's because, I'm integrity doesn't have a party, right? You have, I just want the guy who won to win. And I really can't see it any other way. It's solid black and white. We have a winner and we have a loser. And we have an accounting process to get enough evidence to confirm that that is in fact the case. And we are just not applying that. And that is a problem.
Very
And
much so.
you have a public who is becoming more and more enraged at a lot of stuff that probably isn't true, but it's directionally questionable. So where there's smoke, there's fire. You can't tell a person that's seeing a whole bunch of smoke, there ain't no fire there. And that's what I think is happening. We're just saying, well, ain't no fire here, but there's a lot of fire.
And the fire that you witnessed, you documented of 546 people had cast a ballot at Unity Church, but the final count for Unity Christian showed only 330 votes. 40% of the votes had disappeared. Phew.
Yeah, and in that case, and it's documented in the Bloomberg piece, but take the black guy, right? Three-fifths of a person is 0.6. I counted up a precinct that showed up at 100% of turnout, but when it was tallied, it lost 40%. That means everyone's vote in that precinct was the equivalent of 0.6. That was juicy. That was really juicy when I looked at it. I was like, wait a minute. And then I'm studying fraction magic, right? I'm realizing that I can set the weight of a voter to a weight of lower than that if I wanted to. And I'm playing like war games with the computer because I've written, I think before Hammer and Scorecard. I was hurt when I heard it was a Hammer and Scorecard because I had written fraction magic in 2016 and I was on an island by myself and people was like, no, this guy's crazy. And I was on Alex. Well, I didn't go, but Bev Harris was on Alex Jones, and I think his site went down. There were so many people interested in Fraction Magic, and the documentary is still out there. I think it hit 2.5 million views the first night. It came out on like Halloween. You can read the comment section, and they was like, "Well, it's getting suppressed. I can't share it on Facebook." And then now it's like cruising at like 300-some thousand views after 2016. Like nobody's watching it, but people are watching it. People are watching that video.
So let me see if I understand Fraction Magic correctly. If I place a vote, you would think that one vote equals 100% or one.
Right.
If you change the algorithm in the machine to 0.6, my one vote is now worth 0.6.
Correct.
So if you were to say somebody else's vote is worth one and mine's worth 0.6, even if it was a two-person vote, 50-50, the person on the other side is going to get more of a weight and they win.
Yep. Yep.
And you just do that over millions and millions and millions of vote, and you get to determine before the election even starts who wins.
Correct.
And that's correct. And you saw that happened. Somebody stole your algorithm and did it.
It's called a weighted election.
A weighted election. So in Tennessee, most counties in the state don't keep paper records of ballots, so there are no physical votes locked in a room somewhere.
Yeah, we were running DREs, so the direct recording electronic wrote everything to memory. So after the memory card is gone, that's it. So there's no paper record. And that's why I'm such a fierce advocate for hand-marked paper ballots. Because in my study, and I'm on the board of Audit Elections, who is running the Ballot Image Project, and they're doing some really good work down there in Arizona. They pushing legislation. We might have some good election integrity bills that come out of Arizona. And Maricopa County is the second largest county in the continental U.S., so...
They went too far, probably.
It's an idea whose time is coming. So John Brakey is the executive director for Audit USA, and he was the one that I met him doing Fraction Magic, and he just kept asking me. He was like, "Benny, you can change the numbers. You can change them on the fly. What about the images?" And I said, "No, man, I was trying to get at it. Think about it. If you fill in a bubble, right? 0.6 of a bubble still means I voted for you." So, like, but I can't
you move the bubble? Can't you just move, like, with Photoshop PowerPoint?
People,
you just
and people say that you can do that, but think about these. It's like 7,000 jurisdictions,
right?
And these counties don't have like AI tools or Amazon Web Services, you know, to manipulate an image, right? Just try to open a big fat PDF up on your regular laptop. Your computer gonna freeze. Now, these images aren't that type of image, and yes, you at some point probably can manipulate the image, but that's the reason why the Ballot Image Project is making there be a marriage between the paper ballot and the image. Mm-hmm. So look no further than Tim Canova in Broward County, Democrat, running against Democrat Debbie Wasserman Schultz. We go down there, we inspect the elections. He asks, was it Brenda Snipes? "Give me the images." They say, "We don't have any images." "Give me the image." He sues, and they say, "All right, we got the images." And he says, "Okay, now give me the paper ballots so that I can compare them." Then the ballots got destroyed. So it's important to know that that's a pairing. The image is just interim so that I can then use that to inspect ballots. So it's a 1-2 punch. So it's really, yeah, change the image, but the ballot better look the exact same as that picture, because I think it's a selfie, right? Like, what are the odds that I take a picture and my eye is right here, and then
a digital photocopy, like a scan? Yeah,
that's right.
And if they would do what I've been advocating for and just put them in sequential order, so mm-hmm. there's like my code is 554 and yours is 553. Mm-hmm. I know yours is yours and mine is mine, and I could call you and say, "Hey, are you sure that's who you wanted?" and or whatever, and it could be verified very quickly. And
well, that you can't violate the sanctity of the ballot, but you could do that if you wanted to. If you're looking at the images, like, there's no way you're going to foolproof the sanctity of the ballot anymore. It just doesn't happen when you think about modern technology. It doesn't happen that way now with write-ins. They have to publish the write-ins. You think you don't know your own handwriting? Like, you can just put Mickey Mouse twice and just the pattern of knowing what that is, right? It's that I don't worry about that nearly as much as, you know, think about it. Like, you would have to get 40,000 people to risk going to jail so that some guy can keep his $150,000 a year job.
Yeah.
You're not going to
30,000 if it's a assemblyman in the state.
Yeah, you're not going to do that. He's going to do it. He's got more incentive to do that than you do.
Right.
So I'm a lot less worried about purity in the sanctity of the ballot, because people are going to know their handwriting. There's nothing you can do about that.
Global Election Management System, which is a personal computer installed with Diebold software that sits in a windowless room in the county's election headquarters. The tabulator is the brains of the system. It monitors the voting machines, sorts out which machines have delivered data and which haven't, and tallies the results. As voting machines check in and their votes are included in the official count, each machine's status turns green on the GEMS master panel. A red light means the upload has failed. Is that, I think, 1980s technology, Diebold, when they were, before they were acquired, is it good? Is it
no, that was some real old, like, what the stuff that now is, I wouldn't classify the stuff that we have right now. If it just came out yesterday, I wouldn't even classify it as new. It's just really outdated tech. Like, it's probably more inferior than an iPad 2 or iPad 1. it should be basic, though. If you think about it, I need to fill out a bubble. You need to scan it. You need to pre-tabulate it. And then we need to compare it against the hard copies to make sure that the computer did what it said it was going to do. Yeah. In every other major corporation, I used to work for FedEx. I used to work for ABB, man. It's Sarbanes-Oxley all day. It's a basic audit. If you're doing anything, you need to compare that what the point of origin was is still there when you get to a tabulated result. Those people would just be saying they sold $10 million more dollars worth of what they sold.
Yeah.
Right? It happens the exact, it's inventory, the same way that inventory works with milk cartons, right? But that's what makes barcodes bad when you consider inventory, because look, you're in further down in Tennessee. I'm in the West Tennessee. Turner ain't got a special jug for you. It's the same jug as it is for me. And the barcode is exactly the same. But if they are going on a sale down there, you probably can get milk for $1 and it's still $4 here. How can they do that? The barcode it delivers code. It's the receiving inventory system that tells you what the value is. And when you deal with weighted elections, that's what you're dealing with. You're giving me the ability to change the value of one. I'm changing and disrupting one person, one vote in the 21st century.
Yet when the county technicians, the humans, followed up on the evidence from you on the poll tape photo, they discovered more votes that never made it into the election night count, yeah, all from precincts with large concentration of Black voters. So was it like a Democratic conspiracy against Democratic voters to make sure their Democratic choice won that election for mayor?
So I would equate it. What this wasn't fraction magic. This was a very convenient bug inside of the software that large precincts, the memory card would report that it loaded, but it didn't. So the light would turn green instead of red. So I think it was about 22 precincts. It says, yes, we have 10 cards and 10 cards were scanned. But in 20 something precincts, and these were early voting precincts, so it could have been one machine affecting 10 precincts. I don't remember the technical part of it. But that just ended up with a depressed count. So if you have a candidate who is favored to win, the demographic area is going to show where that is valuable if they are not counted. And what makes it egregious is that the software that we were using, this is 2015, we still use the exact same software up until 2022. That same software code, the word is escaping, but that software package, the same package, you have your Windows 10, Windows 7, right? That the word is escaping me, but that software package was used in Ohio 10 years prior, and they sued and they got replacement software and free equipment because it was a known software flaw. it would drop the totals and then say that it reported. And Ohio got all new equipment when they found out about theirs. We just ran elections for another almost 10 years using the same crappy buggy software. That's the name of the right. article. We were using the same software, and that is unconscionable to me. That
so it's literally not a bug; it's a feature.
Yeah, it's a feature. Yeah. It's a feature.
So Congress in 2002 provided $4 billion to modernize voting technology through the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA.
Yeah. Yep.
Congress's response to Bush versus Gore, basically, is what that was.
Yep. The hanging chair.
This probably wasn't the result they had in mind, or was it?
No, that's in that My Journey Through the Rabbit Hole. It's a 20 minute video. I would encourage everybody who does not know who Bev Harris is to just spend a little time with her for that little 15, 20 minutes. She goes and chronicles who, what, when, where, why, and how. Where the reaction to the hanging chad was to produce software, because in Volusia County, and Susan Pinchon, who is a juggernaut in election integrity, she was on the Hacking Democracy. It was Bev Harris, it was Ian Sancho, who was an elections supervisor. And everybody knows Harry Hursty, because that was coined the Hursty Hack afterwards. But there was a county in Volusia County that had negative 16,000 votes. And there's no way you can do that. There's no way you can do that.
You can't have negative one vote, much less 16,000.
This was, and if you just do enough math, if I need to win by 16,000, and you have a precinct that doesn't have enough totals, you need another 16,000 votes to shift it. And what you would do is you would go negative 16, so that now you can inject 16 more thousand. And that is as reasonable as math would give it to you. It is really that simple, that you have a sum total where you need the pairing of the opposite so that you can keep the
16,001, I guess, if you want to win.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that
Georgia spent $54 million in HAVA funding to buy 20,000 touchscreen voting machines from Diebold.
Yeah, yeah.
Diebold is the Demon here? Is this the...
Yeah, Diebold was a global election management system that it's owned by Dominion. And I always caution people, like, I worked with a lot of people when 2020 came around. I worked exclusively with Dr. Shiva. I'm on videos with Dr. Shiva. I think this guy is such a smart guy. Like, and he was so infuriated when he lost his election and he couldn't make sense of the math. I mean, like, I'm on the phone with Dr. Shiva. He's like, Benny, I've won every math award in the world. I'm like, first of all, who can make a claim like that? Let's just stop there. Like, how do you win all these math awards, right? But he can't reconcile a simple adding exercise. Like, what do you do to a guy who's got 4 degrees from MIT? He's running for Senate and he cannot make sense of an addition game. Yeah. And he's a math wizard.
Yeah.
And he was so upset. And I was like, you know what? I can work with you, man. Republican, I can work with you, because I know you're not going to take this. It's not going to register for this guy. It's not. We should be 1, 2, 3, 4 in a precinct.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4 in a precinct.
High school juniors and seniors do this every year and they seem to get it right. It
would not resonate with him. And that's what and then you start seeing people pick vendors. And I was like, well, it's not ESNS or Hart, InterCivic, or Dominion. GEMS and Global Election Management System, there was an antitrust. So the majority of this software that's in the Fraction Magic program, this is the inaugural software. So the majority of these other programs, they have very similar they're very similar code. And well, I always
say vote tabulators are certified to run only on Windows 2000, which Microsoft stopped supporting 6 years ago.
Yeah, 6 years. Yeah.
To support the older operating system, the state had to hire a contractor to custom build 100 servers, which of course are more vulnerable to hacking because they can no longer get current security updates.
Yeah, yeah. And then is Garland Favorito, is another good guy in Georgia. He was suing and fighting to block the purchase of, they were getting rid of, I think it was a judge, federal judge, said that there was no way that Georgia could continue running elections on the Diebold software. And another good name, Marilyn Marks, she was one of the litigants. And I think she's in the new HBO documentary, The Kill Chain, where she was fighting, trying to block the machines. And they spent $100 million. And look at what happened in Georgia on smack brand new software. It's not necessarily the software. Like, Dominion has really good auditing capabilities in their software. It's just they have very good configuration in their software too, where the election officials can basically bypass it all. And that is what I would be interested in talking to some of these vendors, or there needs to be some type of global federal initiative to say that these are the settings. Settings are the settings. You cannot disable the audit log. You can't turn off the images, and you have to make this stuff public. That should just be a no-brainer. John Brakey says this all the time. Casting a ballot, that's a secret process. Counting it, that's a public process. So go ahead.
So after California declared almost all of their electronic voting machines in the state unfit for use in 2007 for failing basic security tests, San Diego County put its decertified machines in storage. It has been paying the bill to warehouse them ever since. No one wants to buy them. And county rules prohibit throwing millions of dollars worth of machines in the trash bin. So this whole idea of electronic voting seems to be a colossal failure.
Yeah, yeah.
It's cheaper to do hand-counted ballots.
It most certainly is. Like this. I think there's a picture of the guy standing next to all those those machines. I'm actually having a fight here now, and I'll be before our county commission tomorrow morning, advocating that we retain our equipment. They're trying to destroy our equipment. I was like, well, we need to preserve the memory cards and the data of the election, because we have a federal mandate that we have to store and preserve federal election data for 22 months. And they're trying to put it in a shredder. And, you know, it's interesting when you look at, if you just put on the bad guy lens for a second and say, well, you know, I want to stay in power. I'm gonna get me somebody to rig these elections. Everything that you would do to maintain or preserve that is what you see counties doing when the public is saying, well, let's slow down, let's follow the law. And that's the part that's uncomfortable for me. I just think that they don't, you know, most of our election officials are probably the most God-fearing, want to do their job, and there's so much scrutiny on them, and it should be. But, you know, the type of stuff that I'm talking about, this is in the hands of a select few. This isn't some widespread. This would be some people who have access and have intent to do something, and the framework is there that would facilitate it if they were. And that's what's uncomfortable for
me. And the risk is violation of trust, which is what an election is supposed to be.
And the
election
risk is day. Billions of dollars in power and appropriations and appointments and salaries and contracts. It's a lot at stake when you actually look at it. And that's just not cool. It's not cool. Yeah. I'm under oath. Like I say it all the time. Like I did all of my work as a citizen. Now I'm under oath though. Like it's, you know, I'm, my job is to promote the electoral process, but I'm not going to lie about it.
Right.
Like there are real problems.
Well,
that need
in
to be
Shelby
addressed.
County, multiple lawsuits over the past 10 years allege that voting machines and computerized tabulators have been used to steal or suppress votes. That's on the record, right? Deepening that distrust of a system that locals see as stacked against them.
Yep. When I do my presentation, as a matter of fact, I did the presentation. I had half of this in my presentation in Franklin, Tennessee, where I was just using the headlines. I was like, don't take my word for it. Just look at the headlines that were in the papers in 2012. I think they said, it was like, we should just copy and paste the same headline every time there is election that the election officials said that the glitches were corrected. I'm like, what? There's no such thing as a glitch. What do you, like, software don't change its mind. And if it does, they're calling it AI. Right. There was no AI back then. So the software
garbage like, in, oh, garbage
you
know, out.
I don't want this guy to win. I'm gonna lose.
You type
a few
it into the code. That's exactly the result you wanted. There's no right. Unless the whole thing crashes. It's what they wanted. You recorded a saying after the votes that disappeared from Unity Church last October. Something changed. I kind of knew this would be a place where this could happen, but this morbid feeling came over me. Are you serious? He remembers thinking, is this how politics is supposed to work? Is anybody's vote safe? And so I pulled that quote out because in the beginning, I talked about the history of Shelby County and how, you know, it sort of got staffed and then it became relatively recently computerized. Did it change, or has this just a different way of ballot stuffing that's been around all the time?
Yeah, I think it's more of an automation feature of I think I can go back to the days. I'm old enough, I'm young enough to have not experienced it, but old enough to have learned from the people older than me as they talked about it. When Willie Harrington ran, he's running for mayor again. He was a 5-term mayor. Mm-hmm. But his first term, they were hiding ballots down in like a basement. And people will say, well, don't go back to paper ballots because people just hide them. Yeah, but it's hard to get rid of it. Like the computer is gone. You can't do anything about it. I'm hit delete, right? But just trying to, can you imagine what it's like to try to get rid of 30,000 pieces of paper? That's a lot harder.
You need fires and you need bombs. Yeah.
I'd rather stuff
you with some rub paper. A magnet against the computer hard drive, and that's the end of that.
I'm telling you, I'd rather stuff you with paper trying to figure it out. So that has the distrust of election outcomes has been that way in Shelby County for a long time. We have a lot of history. History is replete with examples of why we should just be going for more. Again, I don't believe my neighbor, the guy across the street, probably a really great guy. But that don't mean I don't want to lock on my door.
Right.
I just don't have to trust him, right? It doesn't matter if he's a bad neighbor or a good neighbor. Just do what you do in your house. I'm going to do what I do in mine. You can't come over here unless I let you in. So
I always say on the show, follow the money, right? And election systems and software, which is ESNS, and mm-hmm. Dominion Voting Systems are the biggest two companies in this mm-hmm. space. Mm-hmm. Neither has much in common with the giants of computing like Apple or Dell or IBM and Hewlett Packard have all steered clear of the sector. They don't want to do this. Which generates, according to an analysis by Harvard, Stephen Ansel-Behari, I'm terrible with last names because I have a terrible last name, about $300 million in annual revenue. For context, Apple generates about $300 million usage every 12 hours. So it isn't about the money. Nope. It's just about the power that comes after the election is done.
Yeah, it's a small niche area. But when you consider that you're delivering power, right? You're delivering power.
Yep.
If I wanted to be, let's say I wanted to, God forbid, like don't nobody chop this up. Let's say I wanted to be a bad guy and I wanted to sell Fraction Magic, because Fraction Magic would run on any system that would be running GEM software. This is court case documents. I built that proof of concept using real, you know, election equipment. And it is it's nasty. It's nasty good. Like it will change the outcomes and you really can't get past. It's really hard to figure out what I did. And let's just say I wanted to make some money. Take a county with maybe 40,000 registered voters. If I could tell a politician, hey man, y'all got a watershed agreement. Y'all got a water agreement of oil pipeline want to run through there. If you get elected, if I make this amendment pass, you know, give me $2 million. I'll make sure your amendment passes. You think he ain't going to do it?
Sadly, I think they would do it. Yes. I only got a few more minutes. So I want to just get through a few more things. But that's
I wouldn't put that past. Like that's so uncomfortable for me.
It is. So Shelby County officials say they're exploring whether to buy new voting machines by replacing all of them would cost about $20 million. Last year, Governor Lee's budget included $20 million for docks on the Memphis waterfront. Was that $20 million a better use of money, or would doing that be better?
Yeah. We end up spending $6 to $7 million. $2.4 million was in HABA dollars. A hand-marked paper ballot solution would have been just under the $2 million. So we wasted some money here.
Do you think Lee's been to Memphis much?
He probably comes if he wants to run for governor. I've seen him at a funeral. Okay. I think he come down.
The new chief of police, well, not so new anymore, but she came from Atlanta after overseeing some problems there. Is she doing a better job in Memphis?
I think she, you know, she's just into the politics. I was in a documentary for USA Today because they came down here after Tyre Nichols to examine the relationship of police with the police culture and brutality. And, you know, that Scorpion unit from the documentary, it was something that worked in Atlanta that probably isn't working here.
Given Memphis is ranked the crime capital of the country, 20 per 1,000 people, according to the FBI stats. Does it have a gun or mental health and drug crime problem?
No, Memphis just reports their numbers. Like, Memphis is a good place. Like, Memphis, they don't, they from all the accounts that I've known since I've been here, Memphis just do it. If it was a murder in this year, they don't try to punt it to next year. They say it happened in this month. The guy died. That's the number. So you have people try to game the analytics, but I think by and large Memphis has just said, you know, this, they call a spade here. I love my city. Like, it's, it ain't bad. It ain't as bad as people think.
That's good to hear. Justin Pearson has been making a national name for himself with his anti-gun stance. Been invited to the White House, and the vice president met with him and Justin Jones. Pearson is from your district. Is he a good representative for you? And was his election affected by voting machine irregularities?
No, Justin's got a calling, and I think it's a really good calling. I think his first introduction was fighting the pipeline, so he's a known advocate. And I think the political spectrum needs people like Justin, who is willing to just speak out for the issues they believe in. I think he has someone that was near and dear to him that was shot and killed. So it's you know, they say, always say, pick your hill to die on. This is what this guy believes in. Barbara Cooper is who he succeeded. Barbara Cooper was like a mom to me. I was a pallbearer in her funeral. Wow. That's where I saw Governor Lee. And I think she would be happy for someone to pick up the gauntlet and speak out as much as he does. Now, he's got to learn that if he wants to get anything done, that, you know, you got to have some committee members that's going to be willing to put their name on something that that has your name on it. So I think the polarization of what he's doing now may have hurt him some, but, and you know, he's young. He probably would come back to me and argue that didn't even matter. So it's an exciting time when you have these younger people. You know, I think there were so many people, you know, crying out for some type of justice. It was new to the shooting. And with the kids getting killed, so the guy just took it and ran with it. So it's, you know, it's free country, and you know, people speak out, so you just have to take it, you know, yeah. Take it as it comes.
Well, it's nice to hear you say it, though. Your Twitter bio reads: democracy equals bracket Democrat plus Republican end bracket times zero.
Yeah,
which I believe democracy equals zero, if I know my calculus there. What does that mean?
We need to get rid of Democrats and Republicans if we want a democracy, right? Yes. You gotta get rid of, and if zero cancels out in algebra, all you're left with is democracy. And that's what I was trying to highlight. Like, because the brace means you gotta do that first, and then and then you end up with that, and then just democracy on the other side. I tried to say we need to really work on our priorities. The order of operations do matter. And a lot of what is happening is basically we doing a lot of stuff out of order. So it's a tongue in cheek tagline. As soon as you said it, I knew what you was talking about.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm a Democrat. Love Democrat local politics. I'm more independent when you get national because, you know, again, like I do election integrity for the integrity. You know, obviously I'm a state Democrat, so I advocate for Democrat commissioners. But when it comes to election integrity, I'm advocating for the process and the oath that I took. So,
okay. So last question, since you are at the state now, we talked a lot about the county. Have any changes been made for the better leading up to next year's presidential and governor's election?
We had our first meeting May the 1st. So we haven't met. Our next one is July the 10th. So all we did was formed the new commission. I do think that there is a good group down there. I've addressed that group before. There are only two commissioners that are returning, so you know I'm excited. You know, I think me having the election expertise to come down there and have a fruitful discussion, knowing the issues and knowing some of the technical ramifications of it, I'm interested to see that once the commissioners are better informed from a colleague and the information is not so far removed, how would they respond to it? You think about it, these are appointed positions, elections crossing to so many different professions. A lot of time it's hard to digest all this stuff before you vote for something. So I'm kind of interested. Hopefully I'll get down there and be a voice of reason, and they'll know me. I'm a straight shooter. I'm not partisan. I really, not when it comes to the oath. You know, I'm obviously looking for my job and role is to make sure I'm looking after Democratic commissioners and evaluating their performance. And I entirely intend to do that. But when it comes to policies, I'm just saying, what makes the state purple?
That's great. Well, I look forward to having you on again and tell us the update on all of that. We are at the end here. So tell everyone where they can go to find out more about you, follow you on social, and follow your work in election integrity.
Okay. I would send everybody first to blackboxvoting.org. That is now my organization. I am desperately going to do something with it because I think there is a huge void in election integrity because Bev decided that she wanted to do something for herself for a change. She has been sacrificed for the nation, and she still gets sought after every election, and she deserves to just take a chill pill. The second place is I'm on Twitter. Twitter is at Benny Smith is in my tagline here. Don't do much on Instagram, but blackboxvoting.org. And then I'm all my information, if you want to see a lot of the work and try to skip the rabbit hole, it's BennySmith.com. That's my name, BennySmith.com. And just skip the first section, go to elections, and you'll see a lot of stuff with election integrity.
And there is a lot. I can attest to that. That's where I got all my homework done. Yeah. So, well, thanks for coming on. We look forward to seeing you again.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Good luck. Harvey Durham Health Insurance Agency is the trusted independent health insurance agency that you can depend on for all your health insurance coverage needs. He's great because he doesn't look at health insurance as sales. He looks at it as helping people and doing the best he can to solve your current long-term care, disability, and Medicare supplement needs, even pets. I know, I'm a client, and so is my lab, Caroline. Over 30 years of insurance experience behind every policy, give Harvey a call at 731-727-9242 or email him at harveydurham@harveydurham.com and tell him Steve and Steve at Mill Creek View sent you.
My name is Simon Ateba with Today News Africa in Washington, D.C. I'm the White House correspondent for Today News Africa, and you are listening to the Mill Creek View podcast. I don't understand.
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, as we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, what'd you think of our guest, Benny Smith?
Well, off air, people don't get to see us really having an animated talk. Boy, if we could only record that. But anyway.
Off the record.
Off the record. And it will stay off the record. I love Benny. I love what he's doing. And what a man of God. What an honest guy. And we need 1,000-fold Benny Smiths. We really
absolutely
do.
Absolutely. See, we have Democrats on the show. They just have to volunteer to come on.
Yep.
Did you know the first Mother's Day was announced today in 1914 after a congressional resolution and proclamation by President Wilson?
No.
Yeah, probably the worst president we've ever had, but a nice day. Producer Steve, do you know who Maureen Dowd is?
Okay, she used to be one of the individuals. She was a reporter, and she
still
was
an individual, still a reporter.
And she was one of the biggest. She would get in there where other people didn't, where people feared to tread, she would go.
I'm not so sure about that.
Or is that, there was another.
He's a longtime syndicated columnist with the New York Times. During the 70s and early 80s, she worked for the Washington Star and Time, writing news, sports, and feature articles. Nothing to 60 Minutes in its glory days. She joined the New York Times in 1983 as a metropolitan reporter and became an op-ed writer in 1995. So she gets paid to just do what I do, say things out loud in writing. In 1999, Dowd received a Pulitzer Prize for her series of columns on the Clinton-Lewinsky scandal. That was interesting. Honestly, she's been pretty irrelevant for a while now, but she finally said something that I found wise and worth your time. Requiem for the Newsroom, April 29th, 2023. As my friend Mark Leibovitz, a writer at The Atlantic, noted, I can't think of a profession that relies more on osmosis and just being around other people than journalism. There's a reason they made all those newspaper movies, All the President's Men, Spotlight, The Paper. There's a reason people get tours of newsrooms. You don't want a tour of your local H&R Block office. 40 years later, when I began working in the Times newsroom, it was, this is her talking, it was still electric and full of eccentric characters. The green eye shades were gone and nobody yelled hat and coat to send you out on breaking news, and it was quieter as it is computerized. I had had a taste of the old loche glamour at the Washington Star when I first started. I was a clerk on the 9 p.m. shift. Afterward, we would go to the Tune Inn, the only bar on Capitol Hill that would serve Bloody Marys at dawn. My job was to type up stories on my Royal typewriter with carbon paper dictated by reporters who called in from the field, including from the trial of the Watergate burglars. It could get rowdy, and not just because mice occasionally ran across our keyboards. Conversations and competition turn newsrooms into incubators of great ideas, said my friend David Israel, who was already at 25 a must-read sports columnist at The Star when I met him. As I write this, I'm in a deserted newsroom in the Times' DC office. After working at home for 2 years during COVID, I was elated to get back so I could wander around and pick up the latest scoop. I appreciate the pleasures and conveniences of working from home. I can light a fire, put on some Miles Davis, and write at the dining room table while getting stuff done around the house. My former assistant, Ashley Parker, who became a Pulitzer Prize-winning star at the Washington Post, usually goes into the office. Oh, on big news days, there's nothing better. But she also loves the flexibility of working from home, especially since she just had a baby, Nell. Let's be honest, she said. Political reporters have always worked from wherever, whomever, as long as they are filling good stories. Newsrooms have been shrinking and disappearing for a long time, of course, due to shifting economics and the digital revolution. But now I'm looking for proof of life on an eerie ghost ship. Once in a while, I hear reporters wheedling or hectoring some reluctant source on the phone, but even that is muted because many younger reporters prefer to text or email sources. Pretty good. Sad, but good. The New York Times' largest shareholder, Mexican telecommunications billionaire Carlos Slim, sold half of his common stock and warrants in the company valued at about $240 million in 2017. Slim provided a $250 million loan to the newspaper back in 2009 when the company was struggling following the 2008 recession. Mexico's richest man and the sixth richest in the world, according to Forbes' annual ranking, stands to make a considerable profit after New York Times stock has risen about 40%, and that was in 2017 alone. The paper of record has been in the Sulzberg family since 1896. Now it's dead. Slim milked it dry, and Trump killed it, in my opinion. I wanted you to hear this, too. Check it out. Clip number one.
What you don't understand. Woke is Marxism, evolved to attack the West. If you don't understand that, you will not act correctly. You will not cure it, and it will conquer your countries. It will conquer all of Europe. And we will have a very, very long, sustainable, and inclusive future with absolutely no freedom. Because the goal is to make us into what they call global citizens. Have you heard this term? This term is nonsense. There's no global sovereign, so there is no global citizenship. There's no relationship because there's no ruler. And we don't want a ruler of the globe. It's a nonsense term. But they tell you, if you actually read their literature, what is a global citizen? It's somebody, I kid you not, I make no joke, they say this themselves, it's somebody who supports the 17 Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations Agenda 2030. That's a global citizen. And they say, what are the rights of a global citizen? This is in a book about global citizenship education published 2 years ago. What are the rights of a global citizen? And the answer, one paragraph later, is we're not that interested in rights with global citizenship. It's more about global responsibilities. In other words, slavery. This is a pivotal moment in the history of the Western world. The model that they are pushing us toward, using the means and mechanisms of that place, is the model we see in China. If you want to know what your future looks like if we don't stop the woke, look at China. Look at the social credit system. Look at the oppression. Look at people disappearing for having the wrong opinions. One of their greatest billionaires, Jack Ma, said the wrong thing about the government and disappeared. A billionaire. If you want to know what the future of Europe and America and the Five Eyes or whatever the countries, it's China. That's the model. So we have to fight back against woke, but to fight back against woke, we have to understand it. And I will close by restating my thesis. Woke is Marxism evolved to take on the West. And it's been very successful so far because we haven't known our enemy. We cannot name our enemy. And I've come here to name our enemy. So thank you.
Yep.
That was James Lindsay. He has a book called The Gnostic Parasite. G-N-O-S-T-I-C.
That's called Gnostic. That's, you pronounce that Gnostic.
That's why I pay you the big bucks. The Gnostic Parasite. Excellent. So, and remember way back before our show was on Rumble, we had a pastor on named James Amanchukwu.
Yep.
He was on here before Tucker and Hannity or any of the big names with big followings. You can still hear it on Spotify episode way, way back to episode 10, if you can believe it. Well, he's still kicking and there's fighting the good fight in front of school boards where Obama told the party to go to bring fundamental change to America. Listen to this.
Tonight I'm filled with righteous indignation. I want to define something for you tonight. The definition for pervert. It means to lead someone away from what is considered right, natural, or acceptable. This book has been permitted in 6 schools in the Wake County Public School System. I'll read just a little bit of this perversion that we have allowed in the school system. So he bends me over the bed and on the blowjob tip. It says, use your... Doesn't it make you cringe as I read that to you? Makes you crawl in your skin. It's a dastardly deed. The question today is, who is the pervert that's allowing this to be purchased and delivered to our library? Who is the pervert that signs off on this bill? Who are you? What do you stand for to accept this? Can you be in your right mind and be decent as a human to allow this to be at the access in the fingertips of children? We know who the perverts are. There's one political party in this country that supports this junk. It's the Democrat Party. It's a party that castrates children, mutilates children, perverts children, grooms children, murders children, and indoctrinates children. We know who the perverts are. Who is the pervert?
As I said many times before, I'm Jill's husband. Teaching isn't just what she does. It's who she is.
I have never felt prouder of our profession.
We know who the perverts are. There's one political party in this country that supports this junk.
People fear what they don't know. And it's not because of intellectual incapability, it's just lack of exposure.
We are going to transform our nation's education system. And when we do that, we will change the course of...
That's... There you go. The course of humanity.
Thank you, Tennessee Truth Seeker at TennesseeMAGA13 for posting that on Twitter for us. Made the hairs on my arm stand up. The blue state exodus accelerates. New IRS data for 2021 shows voters fleeing Illinois, among others. Wall Street Journal editorial board, April 28th. Illinois' Governor J.B. Pritzker shrugged last year after several high-profile corporations left his state. Quote, countless companies are choosing Illinois as their home, Mr. Pritzker said. Then why does a new Internal Revenue Service report show an accelerating taxpayer exodus from Illinois and other high-tax states? The IRS each spring publishes data on the movement of adjusted gross income, AGI, and taxpayers across state lines from year to year. Some Democrat governors, such as Mr. Pritzker, claim that the 2020 census undercounted their state populations, but the IRS data shows blue states are losing taxpayers and income at an increasing clip. Know what that means? Also, will lose representation in Congress because the number of House seats is determined by population. Let's hope they don't bring their voting record with them to their new home in red states that like being red. Although maybe their voting record doesn't matter with friends like these. Steve, do you think North Dakota is a red state?
I believe North Dakota was one of the very, very few states that said no to the masking and everything else, and I do believe it is a red state.
Do you think voters that make it that way like the Green New Deal?
Of course not, because oil is one of the number one incomes that all that comes out of energy is their number one export.
Yep, I agree with you. And you need to know this. Biggest coal-based carbon capture project in the world underway in North Dakota. Senator John Hovind joined energy leaders in Beulah on Thursday to announce a big step for the coal industry in North Dakota. The carbon capture project has big implications for North Dakota's energy future. Senator Hovind, Basin Electric Power Cooperative, and the Dakota Gasification Company announced the development of the biggest coal-based carbon capture project in the world, happening at the Great Plains Sinofuels plant in Beulah. Carbon capture utilization and storage, CCUS, is a technology that traps excess carbon from coal processing. Senator Hovind says North Dakota is uniquely prepared for carbon capture. Quote, you've got to have that legal, tax, and regulatory environment so that you can do it, and you have to have the geology to do it, right? You can't just do it anywhere. You have to have the geology here, said Senator Hovind. Carbon capture is attractive to environmental groups because it reduces the amount of CO2 that's released into the atmosphere. Another attractive aspect of carbon capture, jobs. Quote, it's really, really easy to fight for a cause that affects so many people so personally with the over 1,500 jobs that locally here in this community because of these facilities, but also for everyone else who benefits from the reliable electricity that they'll have in the cold months of January, said State Senator Jessica Bell from Beulah. The site will be able to capture as much as 1.5 million metric tons of carbon in addition to the 2 million tons of carbon it currently uses for enhanced oil recovery. There's no official price tag yet, but the project is expected to cost tens of millions of dollars. Energy leaders anticipate a huge potential for the future of carbon capture in North Dakota. Steve, what do trees breathe?
Yeah, I know. And they already have technology where they can capture it and reburn it. That's been around for a long time. They can cycle the exhaust and put it through another process and burn it even cleaner. I don't know.
You know what else they don't like probably in North Dakota besides the Green New Deal?
Tell me.
Eminent domain.
Oh my gosh, no.
FM diversion officials using quick take eminent domain law to acquire property from about 30 landowners. Some holdout landowners argue Oxbow homeowners were given preferential treatment in diversion buyouts. So far, $97.9 million has been spent buying farmland and $32.3 million for commercial property acquisitions, according to Diversion Authority figures. Based on their appraiser's recommendation, the Water District is offering the Sauvegos $460,000 as, quote, just compensation for a permanent right-of-way easement for their property to enable the flood project to be built. The district also has approved a $54,315 relocation housing differential that is over and above the just compensation to be paid for the property rights being acquired, according to the Water District's belief. Also, Smith said, standard relocation benefits such as moving costs would apply as specified under the Uniformed Relocation Act. The land consultants working with the Water District proposed several houses in Fargo and West Fargo, all located on lots of less than a quarter of a third of an acre as suitable replacements, but the Sauvegos rejected the offer, maintaining they are entitled by law to replacement housing that is the functional equivalent of their home located on a farmstead of almost 8 acres.
Yep.
All right. Last week, traffic was pretty messy here in Nashville due to one little lady that takes up a lot of space, Taylor Swift. The music selling machine was in town for a hometown concert. Did you know she's the only artist ever to have a song on all slots 1 through 15 on Billboard's top 15 at one time?
No, yep. But I heard that the concert had a little bit of problems because of weather, and they had there was a whole fracas, but she ended up going on stage, finishing off yep. at 2 in the morning.
That was one night with the electricity in the air. Yep. Well, she is very well liked, but she doesn't like our U.S. Senator Marsha Blackburn. Here she was backstage a few years ago. Clip number 3.
Politics or religion?
Yeah, but this is on the home front. And also, back in the presidential election, I was in such a horrendous place that I wasn't going to pop my head out of the sand for
why
anything.
Why would you? I mean, does Bob Hope do well, it? Does Bing Crosby do it? Does Mick Jagger do
hell?
It?
Come on.
No, what I'm saying right now is...
Bob Hope and Bing Crosby. These aren't your dad's celebrities, and these aren't your dad's Republicans.
Well, imagine if we came to you and said, hey, we've got this idea that we could halve the number of people that come to you next to it. And the other thing, just from a security standpoint,
you think
Taylor Swift comes out against Trump.
I don't care if they write that. I'm sad that I didn't 2 years ago, but I can't change that. I'm saying right now that this is something that I know is right, and you guys, I need to be on the right side of history, and if he doesn't win, then at least I tried.
Taylor, here's the problem.
I just want to read you what I wrote, and I'm going to try to start. I just really want you to know that this is important to me.
I totally agree with the issue, but let me explain to you. Yes, I've read the entire thing, and the bottom line right now, I'm terrified. I'm the guy that went out and bought armored cars.
I worry for her safety as much as anybody does, maybe more. It really is a big deal. She votes against fair pay for women. She votes against the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, which is just basically protecting us from domestic abuse and stalking. She thinks that if you're a gay couple, or even if you look like a gay couple, you should be allowed to be kicked out of a restaurant. It's really basic human rights, and it's right and wrong at this point. And I can't see another commercial and see her disguising these policies behind the words Tennessee Christian values. Those aren't Tennessee Christian values. I live in Tennessee. I am Christian. That's not what we stand for.
How did they get the footage of this, Steve, and start posting it?
No, because they wanted to have the media moment. That's the moment Taylor Swift tells her dad she's not staying quiet anymore. Marsha Blackburn is wrong and doesn't stand for Christian values in Tennessee people. She's finally going to ignite her base. Too bad for her, Senator Blackburn went on to win by 10 that year. Episode 59, if you want to hear more from Marsha Blackburn. No response from Ms. Swift to come on yet. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. New Life Chiropractic Brentwood is a max living health center serving the greater Nashville area since 2007. You know, the ones that were members of Max Living Sports Performance Council at the 2012 London and 2016 Rio Summer Olympic Games with the U.S. wrestling and judo teams and Tennessee NFL alumni. If Dr. Dion Kellogg can help those hardworking spines, she can help you. I know, she helped me. I'm a patient. We all have a spine. Take care of it at New Life. You'll be amazed. Check out drkellogg.maxliving.com and schedule a health consultation at front desk at newlifecoolsprings.com. Welcome to my quotes for the day. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to Spotify, iTunes, Rumble, Deezer, iHeartRadio, Rumble, anywhere you want to go and get it and subscribe and listen to it, and you'll never miss a single episode. While you're there, leave a comment, and thanks for doing it. You wouldn't let your grandparents pick your playlist. Why would you let them pick your representative who's going to determine your future? Barack Obama. This process of election affords a moral certainty that the office of president will seldom fall to the lot of any man who is not in an eminent degree endowed with the requisite qualifications. Alexander Hamilton, American politician and founding father of the United States. The ballot is stronger than the bullet. Abraham Lincoln. A man without a vote is a man without protection. Lyndon B. Johnson. The ignorance of one voter is a democratic in a democracy impairs the security of all. Nobody will ever deprive the American people of the right to vote except the American people themselves. And the only way they could do this is by not voting. That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Benny Smith, for trying to keep our sacred ballot safe and honest. Good luck. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of mcview.us. Peace in our time.
County Fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like rolling thunder.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.